think about what's happened to him, that God appeared to him, and he traveled, he wandered, he was cut off from his people. You know, God told him to leave his people. And then later on, God promised him a son, and there was time passed, and there's no son. And then a son comes along in the form of Ishmael, and Abraham became attached to him, as Scott had pointed out to us. And then in 21 and verse 11, it says that he was distressed when Ishmael and his mother were forced to leave. And I'll come back and talk about that just briefly, either tonight or on Sunday. Then Isaac is born. Abraham loved him, according to the scriptures. So all those are things that we see Abraham involved in. And the thing that shows through in all of those is his faith. And certainly one of the things that we need to learn from that. And then in chapter 22, first two verses. That came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. I think something with about here I am. In other words, he's what? I'm available. It reminds me of the statements in Isaiah. You remember when the questions asked, and Isaiah says what? Send me. So Abraham is available. In verse 2, he said, here's what God says to him. Then he said, Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you loved. I think it's correct that that's the first time, as far as going back to the first part of Genesis, that that word is used regarding someone. Anyway, it says, Whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I will tell you. So just two or three, four things in general about this before we go into detail on it. Have you ever had an experience that if, whether you were required or maybe even softer, requested to do something that just tore at your very being? It was so powerful and it was so terrifying to you that you just thought, I'm going to be sick. I just can't handle this. Well, I'm sure all of us have had some experiences, whether they were of that nature or not, I don't know. But most of us have had really trying experiences. Probably no trying experience, though, like the one that Abraham was presented with. Can you just imagine, just think about this, and you've thought about this because you've heard sermons about it and you've studied it a lot, but just think, he waited all this time for a son. The son is finally born. We don't know exactly how old he was. Josephus, who may or may not have known, said he was about 25. But anyway, he's had this son for a while. And more than that, he's the son through which all of these things are promised. And God says, do what? Sacrifice that son. Can you just imagine all the things that would come to your mind in that regard?
And he just sent Ishmael away.
So, I don't know whether his mind goes back and said, well, I got that old servant over there. You know, he's been thinking about him all along. But just think about that. And you know, you've heard this talked about a lot. If you had a dozen sons, you wouldn't want to sacrifice any of them. But he's told to sacrifice his son. And then the whole process is even more trying, it seems to me. So for many of us, it's just you think that's an unbelievable kind of situation. Because God said to him, take this child. Well, he's not a child. He's a young man. In fact, one refers to him as a lad. But again, whatever the age, that he's going to offer him as a sacrifice. Have you had any thoughts about what may have come through his mind? Yeah, the Hebrew writer says it well, that that God could have raised him from the dead. Yeah, that's a little bit of help on that. He was going to have to kill him. That's right. Yep. Paula said, and I'll come back to this a little bit more, that, you know, they get to the site on the third day. And one of the things I want us to talk about a little near the end of this tonight is all the symbolism in this, or as we talk about a lot of times, the shadows or the types that are in this. And somebody else had a third day in their death. We'll come back to. But he, you know, he had a long time to think about this. And Paul's point was, there's no record that he pleaded with God, that he prayed that it wouldn't happen. And I think about in that regard that when the angel told him they were going to destroy Sodom, then he tried to bargain with God about this. I was going to do this at the end. Let me do this right now, because it relates to this. Commands from God may not be a necessarily logical connection between the command and the end in view. Commands from God may not be a necessary logical connection between the command and the end in view. Do you think of anything that God has commanded, not just Abraham, but others in that regard? In other words, there is no rational way to see why you would do this. I'm sorry? Yeah, told. Yeah, very good. Hosea, you know, to marry Gomer, a harlot. Yeah, very good. Baptism is certainly one of those. Is when you look at baptism, now we've talked about it so much, about washing away sins and that sort of thing. We've made it logical. But if you just think about that, there's not anything logical. There's something else associated with Abraham, another one. Circumcision. Why were they circumcised? Well, that's true. Why else were they circumcised? Because God said to. Now, if you tried to reason through that, does that make sense? There's no logical connection between the command and the outcome. And we see this in some other settings, but baptism is another one of those things. So the point about this is that if God says do this, we don't need to try to figure out what. Why? All of us who have raised children have gone through this very same thing. Because sometimes you say to your child, do this. And their immediate question is usually, why? Those of us of the old school would say, because I said so. I am the parent in this case. Now, you know, the new school is much more, well, I won't get into the new school. But anyway, Charles? Okay. Charles's comment is that logically you can't prove that there's a heaven or a hell. I'm not going to deal with that one right now. I'm going to leave that to, that's a big, good topic for you in four class period. No, I'm But the point about all of this in leaving it, is that Abraham doesn't quibble. Abraham doesn't try to say, well, why am I doing this? Which means then he's doing it for what reasons? God told him to. He has faith in God. And if that's the case, then you're not going to try to figure all these things out. it is amazing to me when you read this account and I think about how I might be how he was. So let's read beginning in verse 3. We're going to read down through verse, all of this till we get to the genealogy back there. So God has said to him, take your son and go to a land that I'll tell you, to the land of Moriah, and I'll tell you which mountain. Verse 3, so Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and he split the wood for the burnt offering, and rose and went to the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to the young men, stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and do what? And worship. And we will come back to you. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to his father. His father said, Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am, son. And he said, look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering or the goat? Verse 8, and Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him and from heaven said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son and your only son from me. Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by the horn. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place, the Lord will provide, as it is said to this day. In the mount of the Lord it shall be provided. Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven. And he said, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you. Multiplying, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is by the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned to his young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt there. So, just a fascinating kind of situation here. There's nothing that I know of, maybe other than Jesus, to compare with Abraham's test here. So there apparently, as Paul pointed out, there doesn't appear to be any hesitation on Abraham's part, because when he said this to him, what did he do? He started getting ready to go do this. Now, another thing, he had 3 days at least. I don't know how you came up with 4 days. The day he appeared and then they traveled. Is that how you got 4 days?
He was told that evening.
Yeah, and then the next day. So just think, he had all of this time to think about this. And if you think about situations in which you found yourself and where you had to make decisions, where you had to do things that were really trying for you, if it's prolonged 3 or 4 days, That's in your mind. That's something that you continue to think about. You go to the doctor and they do some kind of a test and said, well, it looks pretty suspicious and you can get an answer in 4 days. And all those times you're thinking about what's going on. We don't know what Abraham was thinking about, but there's no indication that, you know, that this was something he dwelt upon. I think what he was dwelling upon was doing what God had asked him to do. And then they get there, on the third day, they see the location. And just, again, think about what happens here. He's got all the essentials for the sacrifice. They leave the two attendees that came with them, and he and Isaac go up to the site. They had to build the altar. And I don't know, what kind of image do you all have about an altar like this where something's sacrificed? What do you think that looks like? Yeah, that's. I remember when we were in Israel, and I think I remember where we were. Where we were, it doesn't matter. And Farrell Jenkins said, that's an altar. And I insulted him. He was incensed. I said, how do you know that's an altar? Well, I've been coming over here all these years. I know that's an altar. I said, well, okay, good. But, you know, it's just a bunch of rocks stacked up here. So if I had, and I probably was more inquisitive as a kid than Isaac was, but if I'd been an Isaac, you know, I might have said, well, what are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? And the daddy's not going to say, I'm going to put you on there and kill you. It's just all amazing to me how all this comes about. So they do all this. They have carried the wood up. Who carried the wood? Isaac did. We'll come back to that one too. Yeah. I don't know how. I just said Josephus said that. I don't know. I'm not claiming that. I'm not. So anyway. You'd have. Well, that's another part of this. He binds him, and there's no indication that he does anything. We're coming back to that one too. We're coming back to a lot of these things in a minute. So he does this, and then he puts him up on this altar. The altar I saw was probably about the height of this thing right here, if it was an altar. And, you know, it's just rocks stacked up there. I mean, most of them are flat. And you lay them up there. You got to have something underneath, you know, where you can start the fire. And he has all that. You notice also that he brought fire with him. So he'd done great preparation for this. And there's a story in that. If you think about God asks us to do something, we just don't do that just a sleight of hand. I mean, you do some preparation for this. And he had prepared significantly to take care of this. So he gets up there. But first, his son had said to him, where's the victim here? And, of course, he said, God will provide. Yes, sir. Yeah. Good point. Brother Holloway's point is that if you look at the pronouns in here, that Abraham said to the young men, we will come back. So, whatever. What's that?
Yes, he said that, but...
but you're not...
Well, I'm not convinced that he's saying that...
That I know, yeah, yeah.
That means that he's not telling his young men, I'm going to kill my son.
Yeah. Is this for you or... I know, I hadn't thought about that. The comment is that why did he take wood with him when there was probably wood in that area? I don't know. I do think there's an answer to that. Sharon?
No, the fact that he said he was there.
Yeah. Yeah. Hope. Yeah. Yeah. But he has confidence in God. Yeah. So anyway, they get there, and then... Now, the question you'll find some people ask, did Abraham sacrifice his son? Well, James says that he did, but I think that's used the terminology. He went, though, as far as he could go without taking the knife. So in that sense, he certainly does. And he did enough to satisfy whom? God. So, you know... He didn't bring the blood, but he certainly did. So, right. Sharon's comment, there's every indication that he was going to go through with this if he hadn't been stopped. Right. Yeah. Yeah, so it's... As I said, God was satisfied with what he did. That, yeah. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Well,
that he, yeah. Right. Brenda's comment is that God said, now I know. I think that's another way of saying you have demonstrated that you do. Yeah, obviously he knew how it was going to turn out. Yeah. And again, think about one of the things. If I had been Abraham, I might think, well, I've been promised through this person what? All these things are going to be fulfilled. And if I carry this out, how's that going to happen? We have no indication anywhere that Abraham raised any of those kinds of questions. He certainly was willing to do that. Now, it seems to me that one of the things we get out of this story is several shadows or types, however you want to, whatever, you know, things that are messianic in nature. So let's look at some of those. What are they? All of it. Well, let's enumerate some of them. First of all, it says that how did Abraham feel about Isaac? Loved him as God loved Jesus. What else? As far as the two sons, what do we see here? Okay. Jesus and Isaac were both obedient to death. What else about the sons? Only sons. But somebody said, oh, wait a minute. Abraham had some other sons. He believed in that other son. Well, he wanted to. So, but in verse 12, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything for him, for I know that you, since you have not withheld your son, your only son from me. So, is he his only son? He's the son of promise, okay, in that regard. As is Jesus, the only begotten son. What a... Yeah. Ishmael, they've sent him away. Yep. Now, he's going to have some other children later, which we'll come back to in a day or two. What other shadows or types in this?
3 days.
Okay, the 3 days, we find what happens with Christ on the third day. Isaac carried the wood. Jesus did what? Carried his cross. What else? What is? Okay. Okay. So another big one is the place. And if you notice, he said that you go to Moriah, and then that he would identify which one of the mountains, and this is the mount. Apparently where this took place was the Temple Mount for the temple in Jerusalem. So you see those connections. What else? Yeah. We have no indication here that Isaac, other than asking, you know, where's the lamb? No indication of that. And you remember in Isaiah 53 in verse 7, it says there that Jesus was silent and he did not open his mouth before he was taken to the cross. So you see that similarity. In this story, the ram is used for the sacrifice or the lamb. And then Jesus, you remember, has been referred to. John the Baptist refers to Jesus in John, when he sees him approaching, behold the Lamb of God. Any other shadows or types you find in this? Yeah. Yeah. So Abraham trusted in God and the things that had been promised, and these work out. So this event, which, as I said in the beginning, is just a significant event, is an event that I think does two things at least. One is it certainly shows the faith that Abraham had. And then the other, we have a picture, we have a shadow, we have a type of things that are to come a long time later. This is probably 12 to 13 or 1400 years before Christ. So, you know, it's again a significant part of time. Noah's raised a question about God testing Abraham. Anybody have an issue with that? Tempted him, right? Another one does. Yeah, James says that no one tempts God. In Psalm 7, in the last part of verse 9, says, "For the righteous God tests the hearts and the minds." So, do we get anything out of being tested? Anything for us? You get tested? Who said that? Every day? How do we get tested? Tempted? Yeah? Things don't... you know, hardly any of us, I'm sure, have experienced that, where things don't go the way we thought they would or should. Yeah. Health issues. Yeah. Viruses and all kinds of things. Who said that? Well, let's think a minute. Think about what's said about Abraham in some other places. We read that passage in Hebrews. Turn over to Romans 4, if you will. Abraham, to me, is such a role model. You know, we like to talk about role models now. A role model of faith. Our salvation, while you're turning to Romans 12, our salvation under the new covenant is not based on the blood of Abraham. His blood doesn't run in our veins. But we can have the faith of Abraham in our hearts. And it is such an example. Romans chapter 4, verse 13, beginning in verse 13. Huh? What did I say? Are you all trying to confuse me tonight? Romans chapter 4. Romans chapter 4. Not beginning in verse 12, but verse 13. Romans 4 and 13. "For the promise that he would be the heir of the world was not to Abraham, or to his seeds through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if those who are of the law are heirs, faith is made void, and the promise made of no effect." Now, I should have said to begin with here, Paul is dealing with some things here about Christians in Rome having to do with faith, but... And I'm not reading this for that part of it, but the example of Abraham. So again, back to 14. "If those who are of the law are heirs, faith is made void and the promise made of no effect. Because the law brings about wrath, for there is no law, there is no transgression. Therefore, it is of faith that it might be accorded to grace, to the promise made to be sure of all the seed, not only to those who are of the law, but also to those who are of faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. As it is written, I have made you a father of many nations, in the presence of him whom he believed, God who gives life to the dead and calls those things which do not exist as though they did. Who, contrary to hope, in hope believed, so that he became the father of many nations, according to God, what God has spoken. So shall your descendants be. And not being weak in faith, he did not consider his own body already dead, since he was about 100 years old in the deadness of Sarah's womb. He did not waver at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strengthened in faith, giving hope, giving glory to God, and being fully convinced that what he had promised, he was also able to perform. And therefore, it was accounted to him for righteousness. Now, it was not written for his sake alone, but was imputed to him, but also for us. It shall be imputed to us who believe in him who raised up Jesus Christ our Lord from the dead, who was delivered up because of our offenses and raised up because of our justification. So Abraham is such an example for us of faith, of doing what God had asked him to do. And we read that, and we should be strengthened by it. And it seems to me, and this is a subjective statement, I realize, it seems to me that the things that Abraham went through that we've just read here in chapter 22 seem to strengthen the faith of Abraham. And when we go through things that are trying, and if we go through those with faith, it strengthens our faith. So what else about Abraham in these first, however many verses that is, 19 or however how many it is? What else you want to say about any of that? It must what? Oh, okay, yeah. Thank you, and I'm going to talk about that a minute. Linda's comment is that this not only may have strengthened Abraham, but it must have strengthened Isaac as well. I don't know of any passage here that deals with that, but how could you have gone through that and not been strengthened by it? I mean, I just don't think that would be possible. Lane's question is, when it says that Abraham's going to be the father of many nations, or big nation, is that a spiritual nation or a physical nation? And your answer is? Yes and yes. But you are right in the follow-up to that, and that is that Israel has never been a great nation. If you look at a survey course in world history, Israel gets a page or two at the most. They probably reach their greatest significance on the world scene in Solomon's time. But I think it's both of those. And when he says, you know, there are three different analogies to use. He says that your descendants will be like the sand, like the stars. And at one place he says, like the dust of the earth, which really gets to be big. Well, I don't know whether that's bigger than the stars or not. And I don't think that's hyperbole. I think that's just how God expressed that to him. Any other thoughts about that? It is a lot of people, but, you know, now we've got, 7 billion people, 6.5 billion in the world. So that's not a big part of that. It is a big part of that.
Who knows how many people are in a descendant, eventually a descendant of Abraham?
Well, that's true.
Because Isaac wasn't his only son.
Yeah, and if you look at Ishmael, you know, he had the 12 princes Yeah, it's not just the Israelites that are descendants, obviously. In fact, all of these people that fight in the Middle East now and have for the last 1,000 years, many of them are indirect descendants of direct descendants of Abraham. The one thing, going back to the shadows, we did mention, though, about Mount Moriah, and that's the Temple Mount. And I think about that, there's now a mosque there. So, you know, there are a lot of different things that have happened down through the years on that. But depending on how you take father of many nations, father of many people, all these things are fulfilled. Now, we use general terms like many and much and all that rings into question percentages. But these things are all fulfilled. Yeah.
You read the first 12.
Right.
And he's talking about that while the physical inheritance of the promise, yes, belonged to the Jews, it was a small part of the overall larger promise which all of us can become inheritors
yeah.
of. If you look at, by the time Saul is made king, but definitely David and Solomon, all of the four elements of the physical elements
yeah.
are met.
Yeah.
So the land, the people, the name,
yeah.
the nation, they're all met. It's really that last one, and that's what Paul picks up on in chapter 4, is really, if you're counting on the physical promises of Abraham, it's almost null and void.
Yeah. I found it interesting in Paul, in Romans, as well as in another place or two, that these are not Israelites. But he uses Abraham, who is obviously we think of as a Jewish person, to make these points. And I've wondered if they thought at the time, well, who's he? He's not our father. And I don't know about you all, but when you hear the word Gentile, do you think about yourself?
We've been talking
for long. Just as an aside, somebody that was baptized here, partner, somebody was baptized here several years ago. I had studied with two of them. They were middle-aged women, to be benevolent. Somehow we got off on Gentiles. And it took us two different studies to get her to understand about a Gentile. And I said to her, well, you're a Gentile. She said, I am not a Gentile. And I said, well, are you Jewish? She said, no, but I'm not Gentile either. So it was more fundamental than that than what we were studying, trying to get her to understand this. I don't ever know whether she accepted or just gave in. But finally, we got the point. And eventually, she was baptized. But I'd have to admit, sometimes I'm reading in the scriptures and about Jews and Gentiles, and I have to stop and think, yeah, well, that Gentile, that's me. But we don't think about that too often. What else on this? Anything else on this? Well, look at the end of this chapter, chapter 22, just quickly. We have the ancestors of Nahor. Who is Nahor? He's Abraham's what? Brother. Well, why do you think these are given here? You have any thoughts about that? Well, look in verse 23. Who did Bethuel begot? Rebekah. Is she going to come up somewhere along the way? Pretty soon, I think. I don't know, because, you know, there you could have picked out a lot of other of descendants that would have come up there, and for some reason, they're included. Unless you have something else, I'm good. Yes.
Well, some of the Buzz, he was the Buzzite, which is noted in Job.
Right, yeah. Oh, some of the others are noted, yeah. Yeah. Buzz, and yeah. Anybody else, anything on that? Well, I want to introduce a little bit about what we're going to pick up with on Sunday. And I know I have three class periods, well, now two in 5 minutes. So I knew I wasn't going to get through with the chapter 23, but I want to talk a little bit about it. Chapter 23 has to do with the partner of Abraham. Her name happens to be... Yeah.
I think the important part here is that Abraham knows that his family did not die back
yeah.
where he was raised.
Right.
That was his, you know,
Yeah. Right. When we get to 24, and I'm going to do that one. So, yeah, that's where we. That's the reason I think she's in here. Okay, this last chapter in our study is chapter 23, and it has to do with Sarah. I sometimes think I'm not going to be apologetic here for Sarah, but I sometimes think we spend too much time on her laughing. And also that, you know, she had some personality traits that we don't always think are real good. She could be bitter. She envied. She could be spiteful. She could be some other things. On the other hand, she cooperated with Abraham in their deceptions, which wasn't good. So as a result, we're not sure about Abraham's wife. But it seems to me that there are a lot of redeeming things about her, and we'll talk about some of these on Sunday. She died at age 127, and seems to be the only woman in the Bible where the age of her death and also her dying is recorded. she is spoken of favorably by Peter in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 6. And there are some things about her that, you know, she was zealous for her son. And all you mothers understand about that. According to Hebrews chapter 11, verses 11 and 13, and I read around those when we started, she was spoken of favorably. Abraham loved her. And then that leads to the things that are recorded in the 23rd chapter. I'm not going to read all that when we get here Sunday. Some of that I just find amusing when she dies and what's he looking for? Some place to bury her. He does not take her back home. I'll just make a quick comment about this. I don't say this to hurt anybody's feelings, but when people die, some people think, I've got to go back home to be buried. Well, my opinion is, it don't make any difference where you're buried. Now, it may to the family, and it may to the person before they died. But anyway, he doesn't take her back home, so he has to find some place to bury her. And all the finagling that goes on between Abraham and the descendant of Heath, or Heth, whichever one you want, here about the land, is sort of comical, I think. But anyway, we'll pick up there, and then we'll do... we're supposed to do next time 24. So we do 23 and 24. 24 is a long chapter, but all one topic. Thank you all. Thanks for your comments. See you Sunday if we don't get prohibited from meeting.